Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we're discussing ICE's violent and deadly tactics after the fatal shooting of Renee Good, a 37-year-old wife, mother, and poet. Over the weekend, there were at least 1,000 events and protests in small and large cities as part of the ICE Out for Good weekend of action. Yesterday, thousands of students across the city of St. Paul marched to the Capitol to protest ICE and demand justice for Renee Good. Another person was shot by a federal agent in Minnesota last night. This morning, Trump threatened to invoke the Insurrection Act, which would give him the power to send military forces to states to stop widespread protests. Stephen Miller sent a message to ICE agents saying they have full immunity. So what can be done to stop ICE's brutal and deadly tactics? Joining us to talk about the latest are two guests. Aaron Reichlin Melnick is senior fellow at the American Immigration Council in Washington, D.C., where he works to inform the public about immigration policy and advance fact-based research into immigration enforcement. He previously worked for the Legal Aid Society in New York City, representing people facing removal in immigration court. Hi, Aaron. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Eliana Mashevsky, staff attorney for the National Police Accountability Project. They provide support to their network of over 500 civil rights attorneys to file lawsuits against police departments, jails, and prisons with the goal of holding officers accountable for misconduct and ending abuses of power. Eliana was previously a community organizer at the New Settlement Parent Action Committee, where she worked with families in the Bronx to disrupt the school-to-prison pipeline. Hi, Eliana. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you and great to have both of you. Given that so much is happening so fast, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about what happened to Renee Good. On Wednesday, January 7th, Renee Good was shot and killed by ICE agent Jonathan Ross, who fired his gun three times into her car as she attempted to drive away. The shooting occurred shortly after Good dropped off her six-year-old son at school, just blocks where police officers murdered George Floyd in 2020. In a video captured on the ICE agent's phone immediately after the shooting, we hear a male voice calling Renee an effing bee, and bystanders scream in horror. I wonder what you both think about this, because I watch the Sunday shows and Jake Tapper asked Kristi Noem about who called her an effing bee. She said she had no idea. Aaron, I'm just wondering, why isn't this getting more attention? Again, after Renee was shot, we hear an officer calling her an effing bee.
Well, I think the Trump administration has really tried to focus this on what happened immediately before the shooting and really try to narrow the incident down to those few milliseconds where Ms. Good accelerated the car seemingly to get away from the officers. And I think that's because the broader context doesn't look very good for them. We have a woman who was not armed. We have an officer who fired within less than a second with no warning. And I think they would prefer to focus really just on that brief moment rather than let us talk about the broader context that this incident occurred in.
We also have an ICE observer, Patty O'Keefe. And she has spoken out to many media outlets. I'm just reading right here from NPR News. On Sunday, Patty O'Keefe and Brandon Segunza were alerted to an ICE sighting in their neighborhood. Allegedly, agents were pepper spraying observers. O'Keefe and Segunza headed over to help. In their observer training, they've been told that ICE is less likely to use force if more people are there. They said they were following an ICE vehicle when agents stopped and surrounded O'Keefe's car, spraying chemical irritants into the vents of the car. They smashed the windows and then they arrested them. O'Keefe says that the agents called her ugly. She also recounts what happened with Renee Good. And at one point, an officer told her, quote, "You guys got to stop obstructing us. That's why that lesbian bee is dead." Eliana, can you comment on this? And do you think that the way that these officers are speaking and what they're saying about Renee Good, do you think that deserves more media attention?
I definitely do. I think, you know, it's a violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution for officers to retaliate against people for their viewpoints, for disagreeing with what they have said. And so this information is certainly relevant to whether or not the ICE agents are acting lawfully when they are carrying out these ICE raids. And I agree with what Aaron said. I think it makes sense that we are not seeing more attention from the federal government on these details, because it doesn't look great for the federal agents.
What do you do when you have officials like Kristi Noem, and then you've got Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and others in the administration immediately calling Renee Good a domestic terrorist and falsely claiming that she was trying to run over agents with her car? I also saw Tom Homan on Meet the Press. He stuck to the script. Kristi Noem stuck to the script. I mean, they're all saying the same thing before any sort of investigation comes out, even before anyone can go to the scene for even a couple of hours to find out what happened. Aaron, how do you deal with that, given that they're all saying the same thing before anyone has been able to ask questions?
Well, what I found interesting was that Tom Homan's initial response actually broke from that. You see, before he had gotten the party line, he was asked about the shooting, and he said it would be unprofessional to comment on the shooting before an investigation had been carried out. And then a few hours later, he had to walk that back once he had found out that DHS had already begun calling Ms. Good a domestic terrorist and claiming she tried to kill the officers. And it is clear that that is not what happened. Even if there are some aspects of this that are still contested, still under investigation, there is no evidence that she tried to kill him. And I think that is partially why the backlash against the administration has been so strong. They are asking people to ignore the evidence that's in front of their own eyes.
I also want to spend just a little bit of time sharing more about Renee Good, because again, the things are moving so quickly, and someone was shot yesterday by a federal agent. And so just a few comments from Renee Good's wife, Becca Good, who witnessed the shooting, who ran over to her after she was shot. She said, "We had whistles, they had guns." Becca Good in a statement said Renee literally sparkled. She didn't wear glitter, but I swear she had sparkles coming out of her pores all the time. Renee was a Christian who knew that all religions teach the same essential truth. We are here to love each other, care for each other, and keep each other safe and whole. What really strikes you about federal officials saying that they are taking control of the investigation into Renee Good's shooting? State and local authorities are saying that they are being frozen out. What are your thoughts about this, Aaron, and how does this differ from what we've seen in the past?
I think the most crucial thing for people to understand is that it is very hard to hold federal law enforcement officers responsible for incidents like this. And that's because Congress has never given a cause of action for people to sue the federal government when people violate their rights, when federal law enforcement agents violate their rights. So, for example, if a state or a local police officer shoots somebody and that shooting is unjustified, the family can sue. That is very, very hard to do in the case of federal law enforcement, which is why federal law enforcement taking these cases seriously is so important. But here you have an administration that has made it clear from the moment the shooting happened that they have no real interest in a serious investigation and are taking all steps they can to avoid any responsibility. And that's a huge problem.
And Stephen Miller sent a message to ICE agents saying that you have full immunity. So, Eliana, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I would just like to add, Aaron mentioned the difficulties that civilians have in holding federal agents accountable through civil suits, and that civil suits are of course one way that we can hold state officials accountable for violating our statutory and constitutional rights. my bread and butter as a civil rights attorney is filing those cases that Aaron mentioned against state and municipal officers who have violated constitutional rights. As Aaron said, there's a federal statute that allows for those suits. There is not the same statute that expressly gives civilians the right to sue federal officers in civil court for violations of their constitutional rights. There are very narrow instances where the Supreme Court has allowed such suits to go forward. Then, of course, there is also there's in addition to those kinds of civil rights suits, it is possible to sue a federal officer in civil court for committing torts like assault or battery. Again, there are a lot of hurdles to filing those kinds of civil claims. So the other route that we have as a nation to hold federal officers accountable, other than these civil suits that might be filed by individual civilians, are criminal prosecutions of federal officers who have violated state law. And when Vice President Vance and Kristi Noem are talking about absolute immunity for the ICE agent who killed Renee Good, I believe they're mostly referring to this concept of supremacy clause immunity that federal agents can sometimes have when a state prosecutor attempts to bring criminal charges against a federal officer. That type of immunity stems from the supremacy clause of the United States Constitution, which just says that if there's a state law that contradicts a federal law, the federal law is supreme. And so in practice, the supremacy clause prohibits states from taking actions that will interfere with the lawful operation of federal agents. So the idea is that a criminal prosecution targeted at a federal agent who is carrying out federal policy could inhibit that federal policy. But there is no supremacy clause immunity for federal officers who are acting outside the bounds of their authority or who have violated federal law in carrying out their duties. And so that's what the state prosecutors will have to argue here. There is no immunity if the state prosecutors can show that in shooting Renee Good, the ICE agent violated the Fourth Amendment's protections against excessive force.
Eliana Mashevsky is staff attorney for the National Police Accountability Project. Aaron Reichlin Melnick is senior fellow at the American Immigration Council. And today we're talking about the legality of ICE's violent and deadly tactics after the fatal shooting of Renee Good, a 37-year-old mother and poet in Minneapolis. Trump is now threatening to invoke the Insurrection Act, which would give him the power to send military forces to stop protests and support civilian law enforcement, but only once certain conditions are met, according to the New York Times. If you have any questions or comments about what is happening with these ICE raids and the brutal and deadly tactics across the country, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Aaron, can you talk about some of the other tragic deaths at the hands of ICE since Trump returned to office? These have not gotten as much attention. According to data compiled by The Trace, immigration officials have been connected to 14 shootings, at least four of them fatal. Shootings have not been the only cause of death. A 24-year-old Honduran man died trying to flee ICE in Virginia in October. A farm worker died after falling from a greenhouse roof during an ICE raid in California in July. And then 32 people died in ICE custody last year, making it the deadliest year for the agency since 2004. Can you talk about these horrific events? And to your knowledge, has anyone been accountable for any of this?
Right now, it is the deadliest year for ICE in detention ever. And that's not just because they're detaining more people than ever. It's also because as they expand the detention system, there are people being put through these detention centers so quickly, and the oversight has been reduced so much that we are seeing more and more people pass away in detention, usually due to inadequate medical care. Mm. So not just outside of detention, not just in these arrest operations, but also people who are in federal custody. And there are, of course, more shootings that are going on in communities. And that's in part because we have never seen in the United States this kind of militarized immigration enforcement. And it is terrifying communities. And when people are afraid, they don't react necessarily the best way. We are seeing multiple deaths following raids of work sites. In fact, you mentioned two. Well, news just broke recently that there was a third death over the Christmas, just before Christmas, where a Honduran man in Louisiana drowned fleeing an immigration enforcement raid. And some of these cases, you know, the people themselves ran into traffic trying to escape and were hit by a car. In other instances in these shootings, it's very clear that there are no reasons for the shootings. And the most infamous one of these, obviously the shooting of Rene Good is one that most people saw, but the shooting of Marimar Martinez in Chicago, a woman, an American citizen who was not killed, who was following ICE and, like Rene Good, documenting their actions, where we had DHS officers claim that she had rammed their vehicles and then pulled a gun. In fact, they charged her with felony assault on federal officers. And then when the body cam video came out, which has still not been made public, as much as there is currently a lawsuit to get it to become public, but when the body cam video was made clear to the court, the DOJ had to drop all the charges because it turned out none of that was true. Actually, the Border Patrol agent had chosen to hit her car. She had never pulled a gun on them. None of those stories were true. So I think why Rene Good's story broke through, that's the first one we've really had on camera. We've been able to see the video. Mm. And I think that's why so much more attention has been paid to it, but it is not unique.
To that point, Eliana, are there any other examples you would like to share with us, given that so much is happening so quickly?
I would just add that, it's so important that Rene Good's case is getting attention. But yes, we know every day from doing this work that there are so many other instances of state violence, federal officer violence against individuals, and that's why it's so important that there are avenues for civilians and for local prosecutors to be able to hold them accountable for this.
And also, it's important to point out, Aaron, your organization, the American Immigration Council, has a new report out. It has found the Trump administration has increased the number of people being held in immigration detention by nearly 75% since returning to office. There were 40,000 people in detention since last January to 66,000 in December, according to the report. With the funding provided by the Republican bill, ICE has enough funding, $45 billion, to operate upwards of 135,000 detention beds through the end of 2029. So tell us more about what this means for the coming years. What do you think that... I mean, I want to ask both of you how far you think they're planning to go, but in terms of detention, what do we need to know about?
Yeah, so for the last half century, immigration enforcement has mostly meant border enforcement. And while ICE has operated for decades and INS before that to arrest people in the communities, those arrests were almost entirely targeted on people who had criminal records, and there was no main effort by the government to actually carry out the deportations of the millions of people who are here in the country undocumented, the overwhelming majority of which have no criminal record and are just going about their lives trying to earn a living in the shadows and raise and support their families. So with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, Congress, for the first time ever, funded the idea of mass deportation. And that included $45 billion for ICE detention through the end of fiscal year 2029 and $30 billion for ICE's enforcement and removal operations, including the hiring of over 10,000 new agents, which will eventually make ICE larger than the U.S. Border Patrol and have more agents on board, really, than any other federal law enforcement agency. To give you some sense of how big this sum of money is, the entire Federal Bureau of Prisons budget, so that means the entire federal prison system, has a budget just under $9 billion. And ICE, over the next four years, is going to have a detention budget alone of $15 billion. And that means a 75% increase in the number of people held in detention so far. And the Trump admin wants to go further. They want to have over 100,000 people in detention beds, potentially even more. We're talking tent camps, the purchasing of warehouses to be converted into large-scale detention centers, and a type and quantity of enforcement and detention totally new to the American public.
We have a question from a listener, Sandy, who writes, if the ICE agent who murdered Renee Good, why can't Minneapolis law enforcement arrest that agent, Jonathan Ross? A lot of people are asking that question, Eliana.
Yeah, so in order to arrest anyone for an accused crime, the law enforcement officials have to have probable cause of a crime, that a crime occurred. And of course, we have the video evidence that shows that creates doubt that the ICE agent was actually in the line of Renee Good's car when he fired the gunshot. And it's understandable that there is a lot of outrage by what we are seeing, and also how we are hearing the administration twist what we are seeing with our own eyes. It's very frustrating because it seems to a layperson's eye, and to also many legal experts' eyes, that this was not a lawful shooting. But what we are hearing from the local law enforcement agencies who have been not only excluded from participating in the FBI's investigation, but have also been denied any of the evidence that the FBI has been gathering. They don't want to take action without having enough evidence. So they're relying on what is publicly available, and they will potentially be able to subpoena records from the FBI. But because they have been effectively shut out of the investigation, it's very difficult for them to put together the evidence needed to form that probable cause that a crime was committed. And I will just say that, you know, this is unfortunately not uncommon. I think it is rare to see prosecution of local police officers who have shot and killed civilians, even when that is caught on camera. When Stephon Clark was killed in Sacramento, there were no charges brought against that officer. It's rare for charges to be brought, and that's in part because of these difficult evidentiary burdens that prosecutors have to face. It's also other concerns that they have. Are they going to be able to convince a grand jury to indict? Are they going to be able to gather enough evidence at trial? And so those concerns are particularly highlighted here, where the local law enforcement officials don't even have access to the basic evidence.
Before we go to break, Aaron, what message does this send to agents who are armed and are often involved in very chaotic situations?
The message the White House and the leadership of the Department of Homeland Security is sending is, do whatever you want. And I think that's very dangerous for officer discipline and even for the officers themselves. We've seen some evidence from leaked PowerPoints and training slides happening after the shooting that there are people inside the agency trying to tell officers, no, you can't arrest people just for insulting you. No, people have to actually impede your work. They can't, you know, filming them is legal. And when officers hear from the top, you have absolute immunity. It means that they're going to listen to those words from their supervisors lower level down and their trainers and say, well, why should we have to listen to you? The president says he has our back. And that's just dangerous for everyone involved.
We have an email from Julia who writes, detention center is another word for concentration camp. Racism is being once again normalized. Thank you, Julia. It is a very good reminder that language is so important. Thank you for the email. Today on Your Call, we are talking about the legality of ICE's violent and deadly tactics after the fatal shooting of Renee Good, a 37-year-old poet and mother in Minneapolis. Trump is threatening to invoke the Insurrection Act, which would give him the power to send military forces to states to stop protests. If you have a question or a comment, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also give us a call, 866-798-8255. Aaron Reichland Melnick is Senior Fellow at the American Immigration Council. Eliana Mashevsky is Staff Attorney for the National Police Accountability Project. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We hope you can join us next Tuesday night for a live Your Call Authoritarian Project show. We will be joined by John Powell, who's director of the Othering and Belonging Institute at UC Berkeley. It's Tuesday night, 220 Montgomery Street, downtown San Francisco. Doors at 6. The show will start at 6:30, and we will be taking questions from the audience. You can find more information at kalw.org. Today, we are talking about what it will take to stop ICE's brutal and deadly tactics after the fatal shooting of Renee Good in Minneapolis. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Aaron Reichland Melnick, Senior Fellow at the American Immigration Council. Eliana Mashevsky is Staff Attorney for the National Police Accountability Project. And in just about 10 minutes, we will be speaking with Sharon Gibney, who's a parent and community leader with Minneapolis Families for Public Schools. And also, just to give you a bit of news about what's happening in California, ICE says it deported at least 8,250 people from California during the first 9 months of 2025. And then KCRA has a piece about a demonstrator who was hit in the face with a projectile fired by a federal officer at close range during a Southern California protest, leaving him bloodied with serious injuries. So there's a lot going on in other states across the country right now. For obvious reasons, all eyes are on Minneapolis. I want to ask you both about, you know, in some cases, how we got to this place. So I think a lot about the Republican National Convention when attendees were holding signs that said mass deportations now. And the fact of the matter is tens of millions of people voted for Trump because they agreed with his immigration policy. Now, we could look at polling to find out if they agree with these tactics, but this is one reason why we are here. And so you have members of the administration constantly saying that they are arresting the worst of the worst. When Tom Homan was on Meet the Press over the weekend, he talked about child rapists being released back into the community. He says that they are grabbing child rapists. Now, unfortunately, he wasn't challenged on that to give us any data. And we have been talking a lot about data from the Cato Institute back in June. They looked at ICE data and found 65% of people taken by ICE had no convictions. 93% had no violent convictions. And then once again, Aaron, your organization, the American Immigration Council, found that the Trump administration's 600% increase in use of at-large arrests in communities has led to a 2,450% increase in the number of people with no criminal record being held in detention on any given day. So can we spend a little bit of time talking about this? Because on the one hand, you have Homan saying, we're arresting people who are child rapists. And when you look at the number, you find that the overwhelming majority of these people have no violent convictions.
Yeah, and that's because there are just not that many non-citizens who have committed serious offenses. There are some, and I do want to emphasize that they're not completely making this up. ICE is still engaged in the kinds of targeted enforcement practices that it has done for decades. But that has become, in some ways, the minority of arrests. So in previous years, ICE didn't do a lot of arrests in communities. Most people who are arrested by ICE were picked up at local law enforcement facilities, where the arrest was mostly a transfer of custody from someone who was already in local or state criminal custody, maybe even serving a prison sentence, and then transferred into the custody of ICE. What we are seeing now is a dramatic increase in ICE officers on the streets picking people up. Many of these people do not have any criminal convictions at all. In fact, the majority now that are being arrested in these large-scale operations in communities do not have a criminal record. And that is brand new. But the administration is still focusing on the small minority who do have some serious criminal records, ignoring that those people are the exact same people that every previous administration targeted on a bipartisan basis. And so this major shift where we see people being arrested who don't have a criminal record, people being targeted or even just picked up in roving patrols or worksite raids or at courthouses or ICE check-ins who have no criminal record, who would not have been an enforcement priority in every administration, is leading to a lot of backlash. And when people think mass deportations, they really did think, you know, it's my sense that when a lot of voters heard mass deportation, what they didn't hear is rounding up farm workers and dishwashers. What they heard is going after criminals. Mm. But there just are not enough criminals to make that mass deportations.
Axios has a piece about the Oglala Sioux tribe, one of the largest indigenous tribal nations in the U.S. They're accusing ICE of illegally holding four tribal members picked up during Minneapolis raids. According to the piece, the men were homeless, living under a bridge near the Little Earth housing complex in East Phillips neighborhood in Minneapolis. According to Star Comes Out, when the tribe demanded information about the detained tribal members, the feds told the tribe it would release information only if the tribe entered into agreement with ICE, and the tribe declined, saying that would violate their treaties with the U.S. government. So it's just another example of what ICE is doing. Eliana, can you also comment on this? Because this just deserves so much more attention. You know, of course, there can be a conversation about criminality, but what this administration is saying is that they're picking up the worst of the worst. And again, Tom Homan just repeating child rapists. But when you look at the data, the overwhelming majority do not have violent convictions. Why do you think this is getting enough attention?
It's so important that this get attention, and I think it is getting more and more attention, and I applaud you for shining a light on this. I just wanted to reiterate how the Trump administration has been blurring the line for years now between civil immigration enforcement and criminal investigations of immigration related or border related crimes like drug smuggling. And you know, we're seeing the criminalization of protesters. We're seeing the criminalization of civilians who are out in the streets trying to peacefully protect their neighbors. That's what happened to Renee Good. She was called a domestic terrorist in the Department of Justice is pressing its prosecutors to investigate Becca Good, Renee Good's widow, and other community members for their simple act of trying to protect their neighbors. And this has been going on for a long time, that ICE has been using these incredibly dangerous tools, very serious uses of force to do civil immigration enforcement and escalating situations by, you know, just firing their guns when it's not called for, using explosives to knock down doors where there are children behind those doors, just really awful uses of force. And one other thing that I wanted to point out is that, you know, the Trump administration has boasted that it has recently hired around 12,000 new ICE agents. And that was a really quick hire. And it's unclear how the training was done to allow those 12,000 new agents to be ready to be out on the streets and interacting with civilians. And that's really troubling too. We're already seeing so much violent tactics being used. And I fear that that will only increase as we get more and more untrained agents roving the streets.
And there's a related story. This is a headline from the New York Times. Six prosecutors quit over push to investigate ICE shooting victim's widow. And that's Becca Good. There's a lot of reporting out if you'd like to read about that. Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Marianne in Palo Alto. Hi, Marianne. Thank you for holding.
Thank you for your program.
Thank you.
My question is, once these concentration camps, AKA so-called detention centers, are set up, what's to stop them from being used to hold any of us protesters or dissidents?
Good question, Marianne. Thank you. Aaron, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I hear this concern from a lot of people. And while, of course, it's hard to say that this is an administration that follows the law, we have not seen any ICE detention centers being used for American citizens or protesters. And, you know, when it comes to the purpose of these detention centers, this is one of the rare situations where I take the administration at their word. The purpose of immigration detention is deportations. And the system is being set up to, as Todd Lyons, the acting director of ICE, said recently in an interview, they want to create Amazon Prime, but for deportations. And they want to shuffle people into these detention centers and hold them actually not for a long time, but for as short as possible before they can get them on a plane to leave the country. So to me, I think it is in some ways take them at their word that what they want to do with these is detain people so that they can be deported, not to detain people indefinitely. But certainly if an American citizen is held at an ICE detention center, as you mentioned, the Oglala Sioux situation, that person can bring a lawsuit, go to federal court, file a habeas corpus lawsuit, and hopefully be released under court order.
Ileana, what do you think?
I don't have much to add to what Aaron said. I think that's a great point. This is a targeted effort to deport people. But I do just want to add that even if U.S. citizens and protesters are not being detained in these centers, these ICE raids are hurting all of us, both documented and undocumented. Again, the Miss Renee Good's killing just shows that that this administration does not like protesters. We've seen that both in this instance and also kind of throughout the Trump second term. And so I just wanted to kind of thank our caller for raising that point, that these operations endanger all of us. They endanger our communities, and they endanger documented and undocumented people alike.
Thank you for the call, Marianne. Eliana Mashevsky is staff attorney with the National Police Accountability Project. Aaron Reichlin Melnick is senior fellow at the American Immigration Council. Now we'd like to welcome Shannon Gibney to the show. Shannon is a parent and community leader with Minneapolis Families for Public Schools. And we're going to talk about how activists are organizing and mobilizing with Take Action Minnesota. Hi, Shannon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yesterday, the Minnesota Star Tribune had an editorial called "Minnesota is Under Siege. This Cannot Stand." We have been watching the videos coming out of Minnesota. I mean, I'm just looking at photos here of fully armed ICE agents wearing military gear and holding long guns. Can you tell us what has it been like being in Minnesota? What do we need to know about what is happening on your streets?
It's just, I think it's really hard for people who aren't on the ground here in the communities that are getting targeted to really understand what it's like. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. I live in the Powderhorn Park neighborhood, which is pretty much the epicenter of ICE activity. And so on Saturday morning last week, I was awakened at about 6:40 a.m. My dog awakened me because she heard the noise. I was all discombobulated, and I looked out my window to see two ICE agents, and they were laughing, and they were detaining, they were kidnapping two of my neighbors. My neighbors and I have since been trying to figure out who it was exactly that they got. We haven't been able to ascertain that yet. And so I know how fast they move now, having witnessed now, unfortunately, many abductions at this point. And so I ran down the stairs and in my pajamas, and I got my slippers on, and of course had my phone with me. And I ran out, and of course, the minute that I started filming them, they went away. And then of course, one of the Minneapolis Families for Public Schools is a organization of parents across the district that are, you know, working with community members and are working with teachers right now. We have other campaigns, but right now, obviously, what ICE is doing it's like an all hands on deck situation. A few days ago, and this did make national news, there were agents at Roosevelt High School, which is kind of two neighborhoods over from mine. They were using chemical agents and use of force and all kinds of terrible things. And it's just a very scary time. And then other things that don't necessarily like make the news, you know, at one of the elementary schools, which has the highest percentage of immigrant students, earlier that day, the same day that the Roosevelt incident happened, there were ICE agents, because what they will do is they will try to kidnap people, parents, as they're dropping off or picking up their children. There's a whole bunch of ICE agents at this particular elementary school. And so they were trying to, and then we have parent patrols or community patrols around the elementary schools. That's what we've been doing. People have actually been organizing these hyper-local groups, ICE Watch groups modeled after the Chicago program that have been very effective. And so they, somebody sent out, a message to the rapid response group, like, okay, this is what's going on. And then like a ton of people, ton of parents, community members came, and they linked arms, and they were able to move the ICE agents back from the school. It's just, I don't even know where to begin to kind of tell people what it's like. There's many of us who are driving kids to and from school. I just did that this morning because parents have, you know, they have to stay indoors because of fear of getting kidnapped. That same family that I drove, I got them, I picked up some food for them. There's been a large outpouring of mutual aid also going on as well. And so I got some from a food drop-off place last week. And so, but, you know, the mom was like, yeah, we're almost out. So I'll be getting them some more. And
So these families are actually afraid to leave their homes.
Yeah, with good reason. We had somebody actually really close to, it was about three blocks from my house yesterday morning. And I got a notification on the rapid response group that there was a family in a truck with their dog and ICE agents. They move very fast. It's like under a minute. A lot of times they stop somebody, they get them out of their car, they put them in their car and they race off. And so there was a minor, involved, and they got this family, including the minor and the dog, they kidnapped them. And we've been able to track them. Like we know more where they're at, as opposed to some other abductions, but it's horrifying. It's pretty horrifying.
Shannon, you are a parent and community leader with Minneapolis Families for Public Schools, and then activists with Take Action Minnesota are organizing. Are you hearing from others who have not been politically active before and are now taking to the streets and taking part in mutual aid efforts?
Yes. People, Minnesotans are pissed. Like, people are angry. People are devastated. People are scared. All the things. So, yeah, we have like the hyperlocal patrol group in my neighborhood. We have a hyperlocal discussions group. We have at my son's high school, there's a mutual aid group that is now setting up a buddy system because we don't know how long we're going to be in this situation, but it's looking like it could drag on for a while. And so it's not enough to just, you know, periodically bring these families food. We are setting up a buddy system whereby, you know, 200 families at this, my son's school will, you know, we're matching them with ally families who will bring them food. And every day on the rapid response chats, I mean, it's probably like, I don't know how many people, at least 10 people in my individual rapid response group wanting to join, wanting to patrol, wanting to help deliver food. Like right before I got on with you, I was talking to a mom in my circle that has a van that's like, oh, you asked me last week if I wanted to drive and I couldn't, but this week I really want to. So I'm like connecting her with the transportation crew. I mean, it is literally an all hands on deck situation, and different people can do different things. You know, there's a lot of retired people who are like on a fixed income and they're like, I can't give to this mutual aid fund to help people at risk of being evicted, but I can patrol, you know. And then there's people who are like, well, I have to work, so I can't patrol, but I want to give, you know. So there's something for everybody to do, and everybody knows that.
Well, Shannon, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us and let us know what it's actually like to be there. Because like you said, it's one thing to see these videos. It's another thing completely to experience this firsthand. So thank you for your important work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Shannon Gibney is a parent and community leader with Minneapolis Families for Public Schools. She's also working with Take Action Minnesota. In the remaining minutes we have, I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about how far you think this administration will go. Isabella Diaz with Mother Jones has a piece. She spoke with former members of ICE. They said to expect even more conflict. Aaron, what is their end game here? How far do you think they're willing to go?
We have not seen anything yet. I mean, they have thousands of new officers coming online. It's not clear exactly how many yet they have in line, but they claim, as you already heard Eliana say, thousands more. the funding for the One Big Beautiful Bill Act for detention is nowhere near spent. They're going to expand the system even more. And the one thing Minneapolis shows really is that for now, they don't have the ability to do this in more than one city at a time. They hit Los Angeles, then they hit Chicago, then they hit DC, then they hit Charlotte, and then now they're hitting Minneapolis. And it seems next week they're moving to Lewiston, Maine, and Portland. But they don't have the ability to do that in multiple places at a time. By the end of next year, they probably will. And we might see this more because this is an administration that only knows how to hit the accelerator and never hits the brakes. And it will only take sustained pushback from members of the public and elected officials before any of this is reined in.
Mm. Eliana, what are your thoughts? We have about a minute left.
Yeah, I think we are just seeing the beginning of what can be a really, really terrible set of attacks on American cities and on American citizens and our neighbors, documented and undocumented. I wanted to say I'm so heartened by what Shannon shared about how she and other members of her community are working to protect each other. I think the goal of this violence from the administration is to try to scare people from protecting each other and from observing and you know, filming law enforcement actions. All of that, those are things that we are constitutionally allowed to do. And it's so important that we keep doing that, that we keep showing up for each other. And while we're pressing, you know, state prosecutors to bring criminal charges, and while you know, state legislators are working on ways to create causes of action in civil court to sue federal officers, it's also so important that we stay out on the streets, we stay protecting each other and observing, because, you know, the Trump administration did try to immediately spin what happened to Renee Good to say that the agent was acting in self-defense.
And Eliana, sorry to cut you off, but we are out of time. Eliana Mashevsky is staff attorney with the National Police Accountability Project. Aaron Reichland Melnick is senior fellow at the American Immigration Council. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.